All of the food we eat and much of the clothing we wear comes from plants and animals that are raised on farms. Farms are different in type, in size, and even in name.
Welcome to Barn Talk. What happens at the barn stays at the barn. Until now. We're going to let it all out for you guys.
Here we go. So if you're watching this or listening to this, you are getting the raw first draft. So there hasn't been any dry runs. We finally got all the junk to work, and we sat down and decided that the best way to figure out how it was going to go was just record. And if you're hearing this, we must have decided that it sounded all right, so bear with us. There's probably a few things that we'll have to get dressed up, but we'll get those all buttoned down here before long. So a little bit about us. So I'm Torque, and I guess a little bit of background. If you're not familiar with the YouTube side of our farm, and this is your first time hearing us, I'm a fifth-generation farmer. Born and raised here in Southeast Iowa, and I've kind of taken a long circle journey to get back to here. So I grew up on this farm raising hogs, and ended up kind of leaving the farm when we got rid of all our hogs. I went to work for a construction company, and then I went to work for another construction company. And became a salesman for that company, and then
specifically for agriculture and hog barns.
Yeah, so. Basically, I went to work for a company that builds hog buildings.
You went out of the industry, but you kind of were still like you went out of the hog business, but yeah. You still were kind of in the hog business.
Yeah, when that a lot of you can identify if you're hog producers, 95, 96, and then 98, and 98 convinced us that. We weren't going to stick around with 240 sows farrow to finish. So that was when we quit farrowing, and my dad sure wasn't going to go find something else to do. So it was my turn to go find a job. So first I went to work for a construction company building hog buildings, and I just worked on a crew. And then a little bit later, after a couple years of doing that, I went to work for another company that built buildings, and I was kind of the fire up guy and oversaw the maintenance, and then that kind of grew, and I became a salesman, and I sold hog buildings for I don't know, 5 or 6 years. I was with them for 15 years altogether, and then I left that company 5 years ago, and I went to work for Eichelberger Farms in Wayland, Iowa, and that's who we actually feed pigs for today. And I went to work for them and oversaw the field staff, and then came back to the farm full-time this last year, and because the guy sitting across from me, he built his first hog building. I've got three, and he's got one, and when he decided that he was going to farm full-time, I didn't want to miss out on the fun, so I came home, and we're in it together now.
Yeah, so a little bit of background about me. My name's Sawyer. I am a sixth-generation farmer on this farm, and I'm Torque's youngest son. And I don't really have much of a story like Torque because I'm 21 years old, but basically, I was in high school and I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I always kind of had an interest in agriculture and business and everything like that. So the farm intrigued me. At the time when I was younger, dad didn't build his hog barns yet, and I didn't know if I was going to get into it, but he slowly started building his hog barns, and that was going to give me an opportunity to come to the farm and work right out of high school. So that intrigued me a lot. And I ended up not going to college, and I came back and farmed full time right out of the gate. And I think I took a lot of crap for that, because that wasn't very mainstream to do that. And pretty much it's not like that anymore. I think people are starting to realize that college is a little overpriced and there's nothing wrong with college. It wasn't for me. It's different for every person. But now I'm here full time and I'm a very, I don't know. I guess you could say I'm a hustler. I wanted to make some income off the farm and I also wanted to do something for the ag community. I saw a lot of just misinformation and misconceptions around the media that was kind of de-promoting or bashing agriculture, and I wanted to do something about it and I wanted to educate people on what we do, and I saw that as an opportunity as a side hustle and also to help the industry that I'm in a big way. So that's kind of where we're at now. So we have a This Will Do Farm YouTube channel and a brand on Instagram, TikTok, everything like that. And we just kind of show our lives as farmers day to day. And we do the farming and we do that too. So
Sawyer generously shows that as we have a brand. I'm just the, I'm the emotional baggage of the brand and sometimes the punching bag. I started out not knowing which end of a camera to hold and had very little faith that any of this was going to amount to anything. However, I needed the labor. So I was like, let's do it. That's fine. If it keeps you happy, we'll do it. And maybe one of these days you'll just get bored with it and we can get more stuff done. But surprisingly to me, not to Sawyer knew that it was going to be, that it was going to work right off the gate.
Yeah. So to touch on that a little bit, I kind of was like, I saw the opportunity of social media because I saw so many people using it for good, using it to start their own business, using it to create influence. And it was kind of like, you know, around the 2013, 2018 is when I graduated. So I grew up with social media and I just saw the opportunity with it. And not a lot of people in the ag community, there's very few, I guess you can say, influencers. I kind of hate that word, but there was an opportunity there to, you know, get in and make an impact and, you know, help our farm out too while helping other people learn about ag. So
yeah, the curious thing to me was when we started on the social media side, on the YouTube side, I felt like there was nothing about what we do on a daily basis that anybody was going to give a hoot about, because so much of our everyday lives is pretty mundane. You know, the size of our pigs change at any given time. You know, basically we've probably got a barn that's about ready to sell or we're selling. We've got one that all our barns are weaned to finish. So we've got one that we're probably either just getting wiener pigs or we're just getting ready to get them. And then we've got pigs that are somewhere in between. And so, you know, you're power washing, you're loading pigs, you're walking pens, you're spot treating pigs. I mean, it's the same thing I've done my whole life. So to me, it didn't seem that interesting, but it blew my mind. The first videos that we did, which if you go back and watch the beginning, they were
pretty horrendous.
They were pretty crude.
I didn't know anything.
And I knew even less. So, but it wasn't so much the video to me, it was the comments that people would give us, which the vast, vast, vast majority of them are very positive. We don't get very many. I was actually surprised how few derogatory comments we get. I mean, we get some and they're kind of funny. I kind of like them. I always want to reply to the really bad ones and just say, "Wow, you must have an enormous penis. Is that, you're just a badass." But I don't say,
well,
that.
It's like, how miserable do you have to be to comment on somebody's, you know, like how
pig moving video.
Yeah. Like how, that's with every comment on any type of content, I guess, on social media. It's like, how miserable do you have to be to comment on something that you hated? Like when I come across something I don't like on social media, I just scroll past it or I just click out of the video. I don't take the effort to dislike the video and then take the effort to comment something down below. I mean, it's crazy. But
yeah,
there's people out there like that.
Yep, so. That's right. And I'm thankful that we're able to give them an opportunity to vent off all that negative energy because it doesn't bother me.
We can be the body bag.
My shoulders are broad, so they have to be because I'm not very tall. So, but the good comments, you know, people were so positive and they really enjoyed seeing because they didn't know. They just didn't know how we take care of pigs. They didn't know where their food comes from, you know, the things that go in. And a lot of positive comments in that when you know not only what we do, but why we do it and we show why we do it, it makes a huge impact.
That's the biggest thing is, and we're kind of going down a rabbit hole already, but in the ag community and just in the food industry, there's just no... They just tell you in the magazines, you know, they write articles about it, but there's not farmers showing you what's going on. And so for us to make it as an industry, we have to, you know, adopt the new age, I guess, and go with the times of showing people because it's no longer, you can just tell them, you know, you can't just write in a magazine, hey, this is how your pork is produced. You know, you got to show people and it can't be in a, you know, there's those videos that are corny.
Kind of cringy.
They're cringy and corny, and it's like, be real, because that's what people actually, you know, they care about that.
Hi, I'm Torque Whistler. I am a pork producer, and I care. And I need a pit like a pitchfork.
Exactly.
I take care of my pigs the best of my ability, and da-da-da-da-da.
So, yeah, we can be politically correct, but that's not how we're going to be on this podcast and on our YouTube channel. We're as real as you can get. We're not going to be fake. We're going to show you what's going on in our day-to-day lives, and we're going to say the word penis on this podcast because that's who we are. You're not going to front and fake it. You know, this is who we are. And yeah, so here we are now. We started a YouTube channel, you know, document our day-to-day lives as farmers. This will do farm if you're not following it. But now we kind of took a step further, and here we are in a barn with a podcast going, and it's pretty crazy, but the thing that I think our audience that we built on This Will Do Farm is they want to know more about who we are, not, you know, just as farmers. They want to know who we are as people, and we try to show our personality as best we can while we're doing our farming work, but, you know, it's kind of hard. You're kind of limited. So here, you know, we can talk about things that we genuinely like to discuss outside of the farming, and you guys can kind of see us more.
Yeah, and you know, everything we do on YouTube, it's a 12 minute clip, which a lot of the questions that we get, you can't cover that, and you really can't cover that in 10 minutes. And so, you know, this is an opportunity to kind of, well, get off in the weeds, but there's a lot of good history here, and there's a lot of reasons why we do what we do, and
controversial topics and everything. And yeah, I mean, we can really discuss things a lot further and a lot longer and really explain stuff thoroughly.
My beauty tips. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff we can get
Bitcoin.
Into. Bitcoin.
We like our Bitcoin. That might be very controversial, but we're going to explain all that stuff later on. And anytime you watch our podcast, I'm pretty sure you got to say this if you ever bring up financials in a podcast or anything. This is not financial advice.
Yes, no,
we are just poor farmers. We're cash poor. We don't take our advice, but
if we were really that smart, we'd be doing something else anyway. But, yeah. Anyway, it's an up day for your update. It's an up day for Bitcoin. Bitcoin's pretty good today. We have a lot of people that have asked us, you know, what is This Will Do? What's This Will Do mean? Where did This Will Do come from?
Farm history. How do we become where we are today?
Yeah. And that's a multi-podcast in itself because there's a lot of history, but I thought maybe we would just talk. We're not going to go all the way back today, but we'll go back a little bit. So I wish I had coined the phrase, this'll do, but I actually didn't. My dad is the one that came up with what was This'll Do Farm, and really, it was a little bit of a spoof in the fact that he only had 160 acres here, and at the time that he bought his brother and his sister out, when he came home and started farming, it was in 1949, and he had a 1/3 interest in 160 acres. And even then, that wasn't very much. And
doesn't sound very promising.
I think it was probably pretty tight, but that's part of the reason that he got in the hog business. And ironically, the barn that we're recording in today, that was the first thing that he built when he came home after the war and after college. He cashed in his war bonds, and he built this barn in 1949. But fast forward a few years, and he bought his brother and his sister out. And when all the paperwork was being done, I'm not sure if it was the recorder or if it was his lawyer or who it was, asked him what his farm name was. And he hadn't really thought about that.
This story is just mind-blowing, because it's like, for me, I'd probably already have the farm name made up in my head and planned everything out. But you're so much like him, I think, in that way, that you would have just been like, oh, just show up to the meeting and just not have a name already planned out.
I think he was just so focused on just getting to the point that he could swing it to be able to own it, that
he didn't even think. You think?
Yeah, he wasn't even thinking about that. And
go ahead.
Anyway, they asked him, what's your farm name? And he looked at my mother, and they both kind of looked at each other, and he said, "Well," he said, "this'll do, I guess." He goes, "Yeah, this'll do." And he said at the time, he said, "Some may be better, but this'll do." And so that's what stuck, and that kind of just was the unwritten name of the farm forever. And that was kind of my dad's motto, because he always was playing catch up. And I mean, maybe I should go back a little bit further.
What do you mean by catch up? Because some people don't really get why he used
to. So he was, if you can do the math, I'm going to be 50 years old this summer. And my dad was 52 years old when I was born. And when he left home to go to college.
Don't get any crazy ideas, by the way.
You never know. You never know. It's never too late. Never too late.
I don't know if I want another sibling, so let's just keep it where we're at.
So he was born in 19. He was born in 1919, and he went to college. I think he went to college in 39. And he went to the University of Colorado, and the war came along, and he graduated from college, and he had a business degree, and the war was going on, and he ended up, got drafted, went to the Air Force, became a fighter pilot, and flew 52 missions, bomber escort in Europe, flew out of Italy, and when he got done with that...
P-51 Mustang. We can get all into that more in another podcast, because it's pretty... crazy.
It is kind of crazy.
All the stories he's told us. But the P-51 Mustang was the premier
prop-driven fighter plane of its time.
If you could fly anything during that time.
Change my mind.
If you could fly anything during that time, it'd be a P-51 Mustang, pretty much.
Yeah, it was a pretty good ride. But anyway, when he got done with that, he didn't know what he wanted to do. And the GI Bill was going on, so he went back to college. He went back to the University of Colorado. And he was part of the first class of the law school, and he thought he wanted to be a lawyer. And so he did that for 4 years, and by the time he got done, he passed the Colorado bar, and
back when college was actually affordable, not to where it was now.
I think he said that it was $1.20 a credit hour is what what it was.
That's insane.
So a little more bang for your buck, maybe. I don't know.
Well, most people, if they did 4 years now and then they don't use their degree, it's kind of like parents are mad at you and you're kind of mad at yourself. But, he went to 4 years to be a lawyer and then ended up not being a lawyer. So it wasn't such a...
Yeah. He got done and passed the bar and got a job with a law firm down in Denver and realized basically that he hated lawyers and he never wanted to have to pick up a law book again. And so he came home in 49, started farming, and then, yeah, he was able to buy his brother and sister out and kept going. So when I say that he always felt like he was behind, you know, everybody that was his age that was farming was a lot further ahead. You know, most of them had kids and they were well on their way to working on the next generation. And he was just trying to get started. And so, you know, everything, he always seemed to be in a hurry and he was pretty driven clear up until he finally retired. Well, he was pretty well driven.
When did he, I can't really remember because I was, I don't know, 10. I don't know when, how old I was, but didn't he quit when he was like 90? Wasn't it 90 when he stopped driving a tractor and helping during harvest?
Yeah. So that's another tie into this barn is, he quit driving a tractor when we were unloading beans into the bin that sits right next to this barn. And to pull in and dump, you have to drive like you're driving straight into the front side of the barn and then turn as short as you can for the hopper on the wagon to hit the auger because of the way you have to set the auger in there between another bin. And
kind of a cluster.
It was, yeah, it's a little bit of a cluster. And
but we're not getting rid of this barn, so we're going to make it work no matter what.
And it's easier now because we've made some more room. But anyway, he pulled in, and he was driving our cab tractor. He was driving our 7820. And he pulled out to go back to the field, and I pulled in, and I noticed green paint down the front of the barn, and the door was busted in on the front. And I was like, holy shit.
Glad it wasn't me.
I was glad it wasn't me. And so anyway, I was unloading, and he comes pulling in and he walks up there and he was pretty irate. And he's like, asked me, I won't use all the explicatives that he used, but he basically wanted to know what the hell I had done to the barn. And I looked at him and I said, why don't you just walk on back to the front end of your tractor and look at the weights on the 7820? And there's white paint down those weights. And he just shook his head and came over and he goes, that's it. I'm done. I don't have any damn business driving a tractor. If I can't see any better than that, you just do it. I'm just going to the house. Anyway, so there's guys that, you know, they talk about how hard it is for that generation. Like they talk about trying to get their dad out of the tractor or out of the combine. And my dad was, he was just the guy that, you know, whatever it was, when he was done, he was done. And I'll give you another quick story is he smoked all through college, all through the war, because everybody smoked, and all the way through law school, smoked Lucky Strikes. And when he came home, he smoked. I think his brother smoked too. And would have been about, like, I don't know, probably 54 or 55. He got up one day, and he always wore coveralls, and he was getting ready to leave the house, and he left. And he left his cigarettes laying on the shelf in the basement where he got ready. And he came over to this barn because he had hogs in this barn. And he realized he forgot his cigarettes. And that got him thinking that he didn't know what the hell he needed cigarettes for anyway. And then he decided that he didn't need to smoke. And he just quit. He just cold turkey quit. And
no nicotine patch. No.
Yeah.
None of that.
He just said he was done. And that was it.
Oh,
so,
man.
He was kind of an all or nothing guy. But, yeah, I don't remember the last load of pigs that we loaded out. He was probably in his 80s when he quit loading pigs. In fact, the last load of pigs that we loaded, he had a mild stroke because we got done and we went over to the house and he called me. And I had left, and he called me, and I came back up, and he told me, he goes, I don't feel good. He goes, I just don't feel right. He goes, my vision's not right, and he goes, my arm hurts. And I knew right away, I'm like, he didn't look right. I said, we better get you to the doctor. So we took him to the hospital in our local town here. And as you can imagine, the doctor, he looked at me and he asked me, he goes, what was your dad doing, you know, when this happened? And I said, well, we were loading pigs. And the doctor looked at me kind of like he would look at
what are you doing, son?
Yeah, at a father that had, like, I don't know, had his kid running power equipment or something. And I just told that doctor, I said, yeah, I know. You tell him he can't do it. Right. And the guy was like, oh, I get it. But anyway.
Good Lauren stories right there.
Yeah, there's
a pile of those.
So through my childhood, that idea of this'll do was that if you could fix it yourself, you were going to fix it yourself. And if you could figure out a way to do something with what you had, that was what you were going to do.
Doing whatever it takes to get it done.
Yeah, whatever it takes. And so it was kind of the unsung or unmentioned slogan. And then, I don't know, I was probably 5 or 6 years old. We actually had a sign made for our mailbox, and it was like a 4x4 double-sided sign, and it said Whistler at the top of it, and it said This'll Do Farm, LS and 3 T's, Lawrence Shirley and the three boys, the 3 T's were us, cultivated to yield contentment. And that was
pretty
always
cool saying. And we have that in our bio of our Instagram. It's cool. You get kind of a deep meaning, but
yeah.
I just hope people don't, when they look at our brand, I hope they don't look and say, you know, we talk about this, that this'll do, like we're just content with what we have. And it's good to be content with what you have, but don't, you know, I don't want people to get the wrong idea that it's like settling and not trying to achieve more or anything like that. But it's like doing whatever it takes to get it done, pulling your bootstraps up and just getting it done. That's kind of mentality.
It's not settling for mediocrity. It's striving to be your best, but doing, you know, with what you've got, making something out of nothing.
Yeah. And exactly.
So, and then fast forward, I built my first hog building in 2010, and same deal, you know, today everybody forms an LLC for whatever they do. And, I was working through getting all the finances together, and my wife and I were talking about, okay, what are we going to call this? And I knew right away that I wanted it to be This'll Do Farm. So This'll Do Farm LLC came along, and then, you know, come to today and the YouTube channel when Sawyer, your story. That's where your story begins.
Yeah, so I guess I always kind of knew This'll Do Farm. That's what our farm was named. I never really understood it. I mean, I just knew the slogan or whatever. And when I was trying to, I started to come back into the farm and farm full time. And I was trying to figure out kind of a side hustle. And we can talk about why we started a YouTube farm page and all that stuff. But short story long, I used This'll Do Farm as the brand name. And it just fit. I didn't want to use our last name as the brand page, you know, because I didn't like that. And I liked how ours, it's always been that way. So I just kind of wanted to honor grandpa in that sense and everything like that. But yeah, so when dad built his first hog building and I was in high school, and then you built your second one, or I was in middle school, I think, when the first one, and then high school, you built your second one maybe, or I don't know. I don't know the timeline exactly, but then you built 3 hog barns, and, you know, I was deciding if I wanted to go to college, and if you guys know, college is very, very expensive, and if I were to go to college, I probably was going to go to Iowa State and major in ag studies, which is pretty much...
Major in drinking.
Drinking a lot of Busch Light and not doing a whole lot, finding some decent looking girl to help me out and tutor me and, you know, get to do my work pretty much for me is probably how that goes. But anyway, I knew that I wanted to come back here and farm, and I knew I was going to come back here and do that 4 years later if I were to go to college. So I didn't want to spend the money. I didn't want to spend dad or mom's money, I guess. And I just wanted to do what I wanted to do right out the gate. So I didn't think I needed to go back to the farm history. I mean, that's pretty much I don't know. That's pretty much what it is. You kind of went off.
Yeah. So I'm the youngest of three.
Oh yeah,
of three boys. So I have two brothers, and I have one that lives 800 miles to the east, and one that lives 800 miles to the southwest. And ironically, we get along perfectly because we have a buffer between us. But you know, so I'm kind of a I feel like I'm kind of a unique. I have a unique experience in the fact that my oldest brother is 7 years older than I am, and then my middle brother is five, and then I came along late. But
what Dad's trying to tell you guys is he was an accident.
Yeah, probably was. I probably was.
Lawrence's best accident he's ever had was you.
That's right.
That's what we like to tell you to make you feel better.
Yep, build me up. Build me up. But, you know, essentially, there's a generation missing between me and my dad. And so that made for a very difficult upbringing. And my dad was a military guy, very disciplined, very black and white. And
do it my way or the highway, pretty much.
The sayings, just like you, my brothers, we can all just, if something happens, we'll all three, like on cue, just throw out a Lawrence saying, like, you know, the best job you can possibly do is not too good for me. And we're going to do this, and there's three ways to do it: the right way, the wrong way, and my way. And we're going to do it my way. And I mean, it's just stuff like that. And as you can imagine, there was a lot of friction between me, between all of us. So my oldest brother, he was the most, I'd say he tried the hardest to fit in the mold because he was the oldest son, and he did whatever Dad told him to do. And he kind of took it to heart to like get his approval, and he tried to do everything like
the Lawrence way.
And they were a little closer, you know, in age, so I think they could relate a little bit better. And then my middle brother would be the complete opposite in the fact that he should not have ever been doing anything on a farm.
He just didn't. Yeah. Doesn't like, I mean, that's not him.
He should be a painter or a poet or a songwriter. I mean,
we always
artistic.
Joke with him that if he was my age now, he could be the biggest TikTok, YouTube star there is, because he is hilarious. He's creative. He's funny. He's just creative dude.
He makes me look shy. Basically.
but farming, not him, but become the next TikTok YouTube star. I think he would have nailed if he was in my generation, for sure.
No doubt about it.
Keep going.
And then when I came along, I had the benefit of watching both of those guys grow up. And I realized pretty young that the Trent, my brother Trent was the middle brother, and the Trent program didn't work very well because my dad would just steamroll him. And so I kind of got the idea that I was just going to be the one to dig my heels in and butt heads and
yell back at him.
Yeah, just yell back. And so that's what I did. And
you're the last one standing.
Yeah.
So it must have done something. It must have worked.
It's like water over rock. So we went from the time I was probably 12 years old, my dad would wake me up at 5:30 in the morning when he got up, and I would come to the hog building, and it was my job to feed the sows 7 days a week. I never had a curfew, but I got up every day to do that. And
didn't matter how hungover you were there.
It didn't matter. And you learned pretty fast that if you were going to do anything like that, you did it early. And you didn't do it really late because you were going to pay for it. Which pretty smart in hindsight, pretty smart on his part. I should have done that with Sawyer more than what I did. But we hated each other. I mean, I can't say that he hated me, but I hated him. I mean, we had a lot of bad battles, but you know,
it's kind of part of farming though.
It is.
sometimes it's better than others. I mean, I think you and I have a really good relationship in the farm. We yell at each other and get at each other, but
yeah,
at the end of the day, it's not like we make up, but it's just like, we don't have to say sorry. It's just kind of like,
we're able to let things go.
Yeah. Like when we leave the hog barn, we just know that was work and that's it.
Just like barn talk, what happens in the hog barn stays in the hog barn.
Exactly. Kind of, because we show it to you guys.
Sort of a little bit. Anyway, when it was all said and done, you know, I ended up staying here. My brothers ended up both leaving, and they've been successful in their own right in what they're doing. But the farming didn't interest them. And so I stuck around, and
well, you had a good relationship with your dad, though, don't?
Yeah,
you all don't get it twisted.
No,
the beginning, it was a little.
It
tough.
Was like every teenager; it was hard. But I grew, he grew, and I grew, and he was my best friend, really, all the way to the end, and that's a great. You know, I was just lucky to have him as long as I did because he was 99. So he died in 18. So that's been 3 years ago. And anyway, that is the long and the short of this will do. I don't know. Is there anything else we need to?
Well, there's a lot that, I mean, we didn't go all the way back. So like our ancestors who founded the farm and all that stuff, which we can get into that later on. But yeah, that's pretty much the basic of.
Yeah. Sawyer is the sixth generation, so this dirt goes back a long ways, and there's a great story about
how it became what it became,
all of those that came before, so we'll get into that.